we did it just right, we could grow Mr. Simpson's blood DNA, and it would come out on a southern blot test to read as Mr. O.J. Simpson's blood, or at least his DNA, riding a Gondriana bottle. So what is this thing they've got going? You know, it's a show and tell to end the mall in Hollywood. So you've got that element. But I want to tell you, you've got the world controllers who will be meeting in Switzerland in June. And they are big honchos. And they're going to be the ones deciding whether to push you off the map, along with those silly little Jews. And then there is the Hebrew element who is going to get wiped out first, and they won't hear. They won't hear beyond your anti-Semitic. Who told you? The ADL. Oh, what do you know about the ADL? It's the Anti-Defamation League. Oh, who started it? Well, B'nai B'rith. B.S. British intelligence started it. What do the British have to do with it? Good question. I would like some words that fit these elements. And I talk very strongly today because I'm once again giving a loud, clear, succinct, explicit message. Leave my people alone and get on with your agreements, or I will take out your mountain in Switzerland. Now try me.
Yes.
Make my millennium.
I really am fed up, if nobody noticed. And on that vein, I want to talk about these diseases. Some of the ones that are going around right now will be taken out with the colloidal silver. So we don't have to have a big, massive push. These are the ones that are in the United States right now, known as bubonic plague, that they've scattered everywhere now. And how simple is it, and how do you know that they're going to loose it elsewhere other than in these higher regions? Because they found a patriot from one of these fringe groups who had ordered 3 vials of bubonic plague organisms, and he only had to pay $300 for them. That means they've got it, they're going to turn it loose on you so they can blame again the lax system and the fringe patriots. You know, these crazy elements like McVeigh. McVeigh is a programmed, unfortunate soul. I don't understand why when McVeigh said, I can't help myself, I've got a chip in my butt. Oh, sure you do. Whoa, ho, ho, ho. And then they come right out on the news and say Prince Andrew or William or whoever it is going off to boarding school, so they are putting a chip in his rear so they can keep tabs on him and nobody steals him. Now, you tell me how one is so laughable and the other is so proper. You got problems. And we're going to show this, and then we'll talk about this. Would somebody just come plug this thing in?
Yeah, I'll just pop right up.
Some people will do anything to get attention. or a day off or whatever. I don't know if he'll be ready for August.
Well, I will. You can count on it.
I can see him going up that light beam now.
Limping.
Medical troops on the ground need to be informed. And let me tell you about Desert Storm Syndrome and the risks for the public.
This is the tail end of the first one.
A parasite called leishmaniasis. This is as old as the Bible, and it has plagued and killed people from the beginning of time. There is a form of leishmaniasis, and now we have a new form coming out of Desert Storm Syndrome. It is transmitted via the bite of the sand flea, the saliva. However, should one who is suffering give their blood, that blood is contaminated. And these vets are constantly recruited to give their blood. As a matter of fact, there is an award called the General Ronald Blank Reward or Award for blood donors.
Especially if you're on active duty or you're in the harvest, then you just give blood.
It is also sexual.
That's a fact. If I used to do that all the time. We'll take a break. We'll be back right after this. Where, and I've got to ask the question. This is Dr. Fisher. Maybe you can answer this.
Wait, leave it alone.
When we first started talking about the AIDS virus, every magazine, every newspaper immediately called it the homosexual cancer. And if don't worry about it, it's not going to affect us. It can't affect you. You can't catch it unless you have sex. Next thing you know, it's in the blood supply. Next thing you know, we don't really know how you get it. We don't even know if this virus, HIV, really gets it. We don't know what's going on with this. Are we going to find out the same thing 5 years from now when it comes to the hantavirus, when it comes to this meningitis, when it comes to this? What's going on?
Well, first, I just want to address back to the other segment. Okay. The whole Gulf War syndrome, people have to understand it is a set of symptoms that I believe 5,000 or 10,000 soldiers who have been stationed in the Gulf War, and this was back in 1990, 1991, complain about.
That is incorrect.
Let me finish first.
Absolutely.
But the symptoms are, as far as I understand, and I don't profess to be an expert, I'm an infectious disease specialist, but headache, muscle aches, joint aches, fatigue, memory loss, intestinal problems. I must say, as of yet, there is no one diagnosis that explains everything. There is absolutely no proof that it is transmitted by an infectious agent. I must just give you the fact for now.
You can please check with Dr. McGill at the Walter Reed Army Hospital, who will inform you that by his own calculations, there are at least 30,000 vets infected with leishmaniasis. Parasite. There are a number of factors contributing to Desert Storm Syndrome, including chemical warfare agents. Those which are contagious to the direct public, to the general public, include bacterial warfare agents.
You know, we keep hearing stuff all the time, literature coming out by different writers and people saying that a lot of things like this Ebola virus and the way that it's kind of mutated and now it's doing its new thing is all because of chemical warfare agents. We've heard that the Gulf warfare is all because of chemical warfare agents. Did we do this to ourselves? We're not so smart that we've done this for us.
There is absolutely no proof, and I believe it's paranoia and no concern.
You'll see that she works for the CDC in a minute.
Exploded silver canisters with different colorings, skulls, and crossbones. I was told to set up there. Now, Montel, if you were radioing in a tank, this is your position. You see these. Are you going to stay there?
I'm not me. But I can't.
Well, I can't see the cases. You misunderstood me. I don't mean paranoia. There certainly was chemical exposure. We know that the burning oil wells in Kuwait released petroleum. See, now, that's not paranoia. What I'm saying is paranoia to say that it's a state
government created. I got to conclude the show. We'll take a break. We'll come back. I guess maybe what I want is the bottom line. Should we be so afraid, or should we just, is there somebody we can write to? Somebody we can call? When we call a Congress or the Senate, can we all write letters to the President and say, do something? Tell me what we need to do today. We'll be back after this.
What's that guy's name?
Montel Williams.
I think so.
I never watch him. It just was on.
I've watched him lots of times.
And therefore, I didn't even get the start of either program. I went searching and found him on again.
We're going to go to pause.
I would say the most important thing are for individuals. Efficiency is actually set up check posts. They're not letting people cross borders.
I read this morning that Angola, the army has sealed off the border with Zaire. Other surrounding countries have sealed borders. No, there is no direct flight to New York City or to the United States, but they actually are checking in airports now. Any flight leaving Zaire, patients are being checked before, they're being checked when they arrive, there are physicians there. And I also understand from reading last night that they're setting up, they're ready to do quarantine in New York City, in Chicago, I believe in Florida, and in California.
No, Patricia, now that tells me something. If we're ready to do quarantines here, somebody is worried.
Oh, of course we're concerned, but there's a difference between alarm, concern, preparation.
Okay. I agree wholeheartedly with that. Let me make this point perfectly clear. But let me quote to you from the Center for Disease Control, who recently issued a report that said that the United States of America is ill-prepared to deal with these types of exotic infectious diseases arising out of the tropics, and that, in fact, we have inadequate surveillance to detect the diseases, and that, in fact, we have medical personnel who are ill-prepared to detect and treat the diseases. With that said, if there's one message to take home today, it is that public health in this country had better become a priority.
Immediately.
And that we should use this Ebola as a warning sign. Now, what you're not hearing from the Center for Disease Control is that Ebola virus is sexually transmittable, that it can, in fact, spread from one who has had the disease, and that the latency period is as long as 7 weeks. Following
no,
the contagion.
20 days,
Lisa. No,
okay, well, I mean,
7 weeks.
You're from Zaire to here.
Oh, absolutely.
And when they say that we're okay because there's no flights from Zaire to here, something's wrong here. You can get there. There's no direct flights. My question that goes along with this whole thing about Ebola, when it first came out and hit the news, I, like everyone else, was going to sit down and look at the news and it says, oh, not spread by casual contact. And it says it again, don't worry, you have to be in really direct contact with these people, and they even hinted to a sexual transmission. And then I listened to the news this morning, and it said, 5 nuns have died. Now, these were older nuns, too. They weren't like young lady nuns. These were sexually active with the patient.
That it's not sexually transmitted for the most part. There has been one case of sexual transmission recognized in the late 70s. There has been one case of sexual transmission where it was in semen. That's only once, and that was in the late 70s, and has not occurred now. We're saying it's not the main mode of transmission. The nuns were assisting in surgery in the hospital in Kibbutz Zaire, and that's how they acquired it. Is it airborne? That's a good question. No one knows at this point. We know it's transmitted by tissue exposure, by blood exposure, by other excretion exposure. If someone is coughing and coughing it up or sneezing and in respiratory secretions, it's not proven, but most likely it is transmitted that way.
That's correct.
That's what we're talking about.
That is correct.
I'm going to say,
uncertain of the host as well. We do not know the cause of this disease. We suspect it may be a green monkey. We are not entirely certain of that.
It could be anything. Okay,
we don't
know. Take a break. Because what we're going to do now is we're going to stop for a second. I want to make sure that you at home, if you watch the show, do not run out today and pick up the phone and call the Center for Disease Control and then call your local doctor and say, oh my goodness, one uncle said that the virus was here today. That's not what we're saying. What I want to do is bring some of these issues to your attention, because I don't think that we've been giving enough credit to the public being able to discern what they need to know and what they don't know. We have people here on the show. We have 4 different families on this show, all affected by 4 different viruses, one of which the government still won't claim exists, and that's the Persian Gulf syndrome. We'll talk about that when we come back a little later on. So we'll take a break, and we'll come back with me and a young mother who just lost her 2-year-old son from a very, very dangerous virus. We'll be back right after this. Well, if you have just tuned in, we are talking today about this outbreak, the outbreak and the scare, and that's really what I want to talk about, is the scare going through this country right now about the viruses that we've heard so much about, the diseases that we've heard so much about, but we've really heard so little about. Please welcome Nori and her mother, Gloria, to the show. Nori recently lost her son, Corey, to meningococcal meningitis, which is not a virus, but is now, I've been told, as we were corrected earlier, a bacteria. What happened to your son, Nori?
It was Thursday the 27th, April, and we'd been at my mom's all day. and he laid down for a nap and woke up about 30 minutes later and he seemed sick. He acted like he was sick, so I was holding him and he threw up all over himself. So I put him in the sink and cleaned him up and he felt real hot. So we took his temperature and it was 105 plus. And before the thermometer stopped, you know, we decided to take him to the emergency room. And we took him to the emergency room and they told us that he had a virus. And that he would have a temperature, he was going to be have a fever, you know.
He must have said 105, but I've heard viruses, but I've never heard 105 degree temperature for a baby. He's 2 years old at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what did they say to you then?
Well, I had said, because I'm a young mother, I told them that he wasn't my only child. I have another child, and I've been around a lot of children. And I've never been around a child that had a temperature that high, and that I was very concerned about it, and how long could he have a temperature and it'd be okay. And that's when they told me that he had a virus and he'd probably have a fever and to bring him back in 24 hours if he was still sick.
So you took him back home, you did what they told you to do, you laid down again, but then when you checked him the next time, what happened?
Well, I was up with him all night. He was sick all night. He was really sick, you know, all night long, but I felt like I had the reassurance that I needed, you know, from the doctor, because I asked questions. I did. And I felt like maybe I was overreacting or something. And it was at night, because we took him to the hospital like at 6, you know, went home at 7, and he was really sick, and I stayed up with him all night. But then about 6 o'clock in the morning, I had been taking care of him with the closet light. And he had a dirty diaper, so I turned on the big light to change him. And I noticed on his arm what looked like a bruise on the inside of his arm. Just like two spots. And it scared me because he'd been throwing up all night and I was having to get him to the trash can to throw up, you know, and it scared me because I thought that maybe I had done that, mm-hmm. you know. And I went on to change his diaper and I opened his diaper and it was all over his bottom. And
it's bruising.
It looked okay. Mm-hmm.
So you rushed him back to the hospital again?
Right. I started hollering for my sister then, and she came in. I said, we've got to take him back right now. This was like 6 o'clock in the morning. And we started back to the same hospital. And I said, no, don't take him there, because they told me not to, you know, to wait 24 hours to bring him back. And I said, let's go to the other hospital. So we went to the other hospital, and it was like he was just getting bluer and bluer as we went, you know. And by the time we got there, it took off the walk from the car inside the emergency room, and realizing how much he was getting sicker by the minute, you know. It was getting more serious by the minute. And my sister dropped me off to go get my mom, and they came out. They wanted to do a spinal tap and do all these things. And normally I'd ask a lot of questions, but I could see the, you know, the how much time was the essence, you know. So I just signed the things, and they did it, and it was within an hour that they had done everything for him that they could, and we had to be airlifted to Fort Worth. And at the same time, when I tried to call my mom, they said that they had his cousin at the other hospital. Well, I tried to call them, they put me on hold, so I told the nurses, so they got in contact with the other hospital, and she got the testing, and she had it too.
The same thing. Did they tell you what it was at this point, though?
No, we thought that it might be spinal meningitis then, which we were real afraid about because I have heard of it before, and it is, you know, it's supposed to be really bad.
But you never heard of this other one?
Never.
So how much longer did it take you? Did you airlifted your son to the next hospital? Did he arrive there okay, or how long did it take before he passed away?
Well, it was the next day he passed away, but never did I think he was sick. I mean, he was a very healthy child. Never did I think that he was sick enough that he
did
was...
Did they ever tell you how he got it?
Never.
They never told you, but his cousin had it also.
Mm-hmm.
And they treated his cousin. How's your cousin doing?
She's home now, but she's still real sick. She's not walking yet or anything. And it's horrible. I mean, he looked like he'd been beat with a baseball bat. And had he lived, he probably would have lost his arms and legs, and he would have been blind and deaf. And
part of the reason why I know that you two, the two of you come on the show, is to try to help other young mothers. The question that I have, and this is a question for a lot of, I'm a young parent, I mean, I have two very small children at home. I would have done the same thing you did. The doctor said, oh, it's okay, don't worry about it, take them back home, give them Tylenol, give them this, bring the fever down. Is there anything you could have done, or you thinking now, looking back in hindsight, that you could have said, you would have said to her, forget what the doctor said, let's go to another hospital? What could you do to possibly change the outcome? Nothing. Did they tell you anything about where he possibly got this from?
At first, they weren't telling us very much. The first thing I heard was that he could have climbed out of the air, which made no sense to me. I don't understand that at all. But later, more people tell us. We get something different from everybody about it. And none of it's very informative.
Basically, we've gotten that some people can be carriers and not know it or and not have symptoms. And that by sneezing, that it's carried in your throat.
So have you now at least gone back to the hospital to try to figure out why the doctors couldn't diagnose what the problem was to begin with?
No.
You've not been able to do that, and they've given you no answers.
No, and like all the other hospitals were wonderful. They were great. The doctors and nurses. Had there been any chance for him, you know, they were great.
Well, it's called meningococcal meningitis, is what it is. It's there. It's out there. I don't know how many of you ever heard of this before. I have not. I've heard of what you said, spinal meningitis. I've never heard of this before. I think we need to be informed about things like this. When we come back, we're going to meet a young woman who was pregnant with her fiancé's baby when he died from the hantavirus. We'll be back right after this. I don't know about it, but I think we all need to know about it. Dr. Fisher, thank you for coming back out again. This is something that I said. I've never heard of meningococcal meningitis in my life. My son had a 103.5 degree temperature, and I was at home. I called the doctor, the pediatrician, who sees him every other week, and he said, oh, don't worry about him. I'll put him in a bathtub, bring his temperature down, and if he's not down in 25 minutes, call me back. But I have good personal care. I pay for that. A lot of people can't afford this. They don't know what to do. What do you say about this virus?
First, I want to just mention what the meningococcal bacteria is so people here can recognize it. That's the most important thing, is as you did the right thing with your child. When you recognize a child is sick, you've got to get them to a doctor, and I'll mention it's got to be a good doctor. Meningitis itself can be caused by a virus or by a bacterium. And when we say spinal meningitis, usually people mean it's caused by the bacteria. Meningitis is an infection of the fluid around the brain. With adults, it's easier to recognize. People have fevers, they may complain of a headache, of a stiff neck, of light hurting your eyes. It's much harder with a child. Your child couldn't complain to you and tell you what was going on. Babies may have high fevers, they may have vomiting. A clear way of recognizing this type of bacterial infection is when there is what we call petechiae, little black and blue spots that start to spread on the skin. And it's very important, if a baby is taken to a hospital, they be checked, their skin be checked.
Dr. Fisher, listen to me. This is what I'm saying. All of you doctors know this stuff. Put it in a newspaper tomorrow. Say, there's a virus. If you have this, look for spots. I'm a pretty well-read person. I have never seen anywhere that says, when your baby has a high fever, look to see if there are spots in the body. Has anybody ever read that anywhere?
Well, first of all, I agree. I think people have to know, and the public has to know. The public can't know everything because there aren't enough years to teach everybody everything. Mothers, fathers should know. High fever, you are right. 105 is too high. You don't have to know what's the cause of the meningitis or the infection, but a good pediatrician would have known 105 is too high. Now, there are books, and people should buy them. There are Merck manuals and other books, you know, family medicine manuals.
Merck manual? Say that again. What is it?
The Merck manual is one, and there are other manuals that families can look at. And you can look up a symptom or a sign and say, hey, I think this is what's going on. The most important thing, though, you can't fault yourself for not knowing this is what was going on. People can say, I have meningococcal meningitis.
Sure.
But they should know that their doctor's a good one. Now, I know money is an issue. You mentioned that. And that's true. Not everyone can afford a private physician. What I had mentioned earlier, we were chatting, is that if you can't afford a private doctor, then get into a good clinic. How do you know what a good clinic is? I'm a snob. I think someone should go to the nearest medical center that's associated with the med school. There are some around. They have clinics. They're affordable. Some take Medicaid. They take other insurance.
All right. Hold right there. We're going to get back to that later on in the show. But I just want to clear up what this was. And I think one of the things are, you look for the high temperature, you look for spots
high
on the body.
High fever, spots on the body. If the child is old enough to say, I have a headache or vomiting, or if they close their eyes when they look at the light, that's a sign. Sometimes you can test the neck is stiff. Of the baby, or of a child, or of an adult. But this tends to affect children. If diagnosed early on, it is treatable, but unfortunately, your doctors didn't tell you to stay then. Be forceful. You did the right thing. You had no way of being more forceful. But if you know your child is sick, say, I want the child evaluated by someone else. I want a second opinion.
Please welcome Sharika and Joanne.
welcome into the show. Shrika Johnson Barad died from the Hantavirus. Virus. Shrika, what happened? What went on with your boyfriend? With your fiance, I'm sorry.